Well, relief workers are rushing into Indonesia, trying to save as many lives as they possibly can there on the heels of a second quake that shook the country yesterday. We're talking this morning with Bill Horan, the president of Operation Blessing International. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
So what are your staff members seeing there in Indonesia? You're joining us from Virginia Beach, but you have relief workers in Indonesia.
We do. We have an office and infrastructure in Jakarta, as well as several other offices throughout Indonesia, where we conduct daily operations. And so we were able to respond immediately. Yesterday, we had two medical teams on the ground. Today, we have four teams consisting of doctors and nurses that we flew in. We also have relief on the way by sea on a Navy vessel, and also we've got a small convoy of trucks on the way up there. But what our folks on the ground are reporting is incredible destruction and devastation. And they are telling me that it's much worse than is currently being reported on the media, mainly because the media seems to be focused on Padang, which is the capital and the big city there. But there are outlying communities that they are telling me are completely just destroyed. And so I'm afraid that this is going to follow the trend that we saw in the great tsunami, where the first day or two, everyone knew it was bad, but every day it just got exponentially worse. So we expect this is probably going to be a really horrible thing for some weeks to come.
Well, this is a report from an AP correspondent talking about earthquake rescue teams, Anthony Deutsch talking about them in Jakarta.
One report that I got was that last night surgeons were trying to operate on people pulled out of the rubble using the lights from the car headlights.
We also have reports of hospital workers putting people into tents in a parking lot. Is this the kind of things that you're seeing from relief workers?
Yeah, definitely. In Padang, there are at least one and possibly two hospitals that evidently have just fallen in on themselves. There's no power in the city. Our teams travel with small generators, so we can generate power enough, at least for lights and that sort of thing. We've got a whole bunch of generators being shipped in on an Indonesian Navy vessel, which will arrive Sunday, either Saturday night or Sunday morning. But access is very difficult because the infrastructure, roads are broken, bridges are out. But we face those same sorts of challenges during the big tsunami, and have gotten pretty good at being able to move nimbly. But yes, we're seeing exactly that same situation.
Well, Indonesia's health ministry says nearly 3,000 people could be trapped under rubble, but you're saying if you include some of these smaller cities, it could rise even higher than that. Is there enough international aid and governmental aid in Indonesia right now to cope with this disaster?
No, certainly not. Since it happened such a short time ago, there's been hardly time for folks to mobilize. The NGOs, non-government organizations that have infrastructure in Indonesia, like ourselves, we've been there since 1998, we can respond very quickly. But if you're, for example, a U.S.-based organization and you had a heart to help over there, it's going to take some time for you to get people on the ground. You know, we wire money from Virginia Beach to our office in Jakarta so that they can immediately buy the sorts of things that they need. Our initial focus is medical, and so that's why we've launched these medical teams. And that's the same thing we did in the tsunami. We were operating 22 clinics at one time in the field. And so the medical needs and the food and water needs, of course, are the most urgent. And there's certainly not enough help there, and they need a whole bunch of help.
Okay, Bill Horan is the president of Operation Blessing International, nonprofit relief organization. Good luck to you and your workers, Bill.
Thank you very much, Les.
So, as I said before, the list of places hit by earthquakes this week is relatively long. Sumatra twice, Samoa once, California and Peru. Is there any correlation between all of these earthquakes? To get that answer, we have geophysicist Amy Vaughn. Amy's an analyst at the United States Geological Survey, the National Earthquake Information Center. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning.
So I guess that's the first question here. I can't imagine there's such thing as an earthquake season, right?
We really don't have seasons as such. What we have is that seismically active areas are just prone to go off whenever they feel like it, for lack of a better word. And really, we have statistics which show we can expect a certain number of larger events, and we just happen to get two fairly close together right now, but they really do happen year-round. It's just a matter of timing in this case, I think.
Well, some of these earthquakes are long distance apart. I mean, obviously, the tsunami that was caused by an earthquake near Samoa is a long way from Indonesia, and yet you have to wonder, at some point, do these fault lines connect somewhere?
Really, they don't. They're fairly distinct plate boundaries, which have a series of fault lines within those regions. So it's not safe to say, though, that those two are interconnected, whereas in Indonesia, the two earthquakes that happened there are just a few fault lines apart, whereas the fault lines that occurred between Samoa and Indonesia are, you know, we're talking distance approximately Alaska to Florida for
wow.
kind of perspective.
So, Amy, talking about the Indonesian fault issues there, is there a cycle in the seismic activity in that part of the world? I mean, the proximity there is maybe a little more alarming.
We really, I mean, the ones in Indonesia, those are very statistically common, actually. There's a number of sixes that can happen in any given year, and, of course, that's one of the most seismically active areas of the world. And, again, it does happen year-round. It just happens that these are more newsworthy because of the higher magnitude and the damages and fatalities. And then coupled with both events happening within 24 hours, it makes it just all that more interesting to people, I think. And the speculation is, of course, I think, understandable, based on that. So
very quickly, Amy Vaughn, geophysicist, is an earthquake 1 year like we had before? Does that make it more probable the next year?
Actually, these are pretty probable in general. Typically, okay. We have statistics kind of going back historically that show that there's usually only one event in a given year that is 8.0 or higher. And sometimes, okay. Of course, there's a few more. We've had that happen.
Okay.
Typically, there's about 17 that are somewhere in the sevens. Mm-hmm.
Amy Vaughn is a geophysicist with the USGS. Joined us from Colorado. Coming up.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.